pick up on the last point of the oxide stuff in the heavy book published.
It was published.
What the hell is the book of demons? The speaker made me illustrate why it wasn't taken up to repeating.
Well, I don't know. The question is, why was it that Otto Preminger's book was not regarded as a work of genius? The reason was it wasn't written by genius in any terms. I haven't read the book, actually. Of all the books that I mentioned there, I think of all the books I mentioned there, that's the one I haven't read. I've only read part of it. And indeed, I think it would be very hard to get hold of, and I don't even know if it's been translated into English. I think people should read it. I'm in favour of people reading stupid books because, you start off reading stupid books, you've got to have some kind of sense of cleverness at that level. Why it was not regarded as being a serious book, I suppose that it's easy enough to say that you've got to exterminate all Jews and you've got to exterminate all homosexuals or you've got to exterminate all trade unions. Well, if you want to exterminate all women, it's a problem. It's something that can't, biology in a sense... provides people with stimulus not to take that kind of politics very seriously. Beyond that, I don't know. I mean, he committed suicide at 23. What we do know is that he regarded himself as the pioneer of a great understanding of what sex differences are really about. I don't know more than that about.
Yeah, can I have this?
One possible explanation for why discord caused the it's because it really goes too far. I mean, even for most misogynists, or most your average sort of male superioritist, that would just be your average man in the pub who reads the Sun and that. If he was presented with that sort of stuff, and assuming that it was going with the sort of language it was written, would just sort of put it down again, basically, because it's far, far too extreme. And one of the things that came out in some of the reports about women's nature, supposedly, was that whilst the supposed differences between men and women were being emphasised, and you have to sort of get this point that there was this irreconcilable difference, not all of the characteristics assigned to women were necessarily bad in a sense of undesirable. And this is part of the trick, of course. You combine things like, you see, if you say that women are caring, that's actually a compliment in itself, just as it stands. If you say somebody's caring, that's a good thing. If you say that they have endurance, that's also a sort of compliment. The question is, what's actually being done is that people are being restricted. Men and women are being sort of restricted in their kind of attributes that they can show. And if you combine caring and endurance with passivity and submissiveness and all the rest of it, then the mixture you actually produce is disadvantageous one. And it spells inferiority, of course, which is just what it's meant to do.
I would only take issue with one point. I don't know that you should... it's not a trick. I mean, what's called the double standard, that on the one hand, woman is on a pedestal, on the other hand, she's the evil who contains within her this ability to bring the whole of humanity down. It's not a trick. It's something that's evolved because of a confusion about power relationships. And in anything outside of a socialist society, there will be a confusion about power relationships. So that is it. What you have to look at, not is... As soon as you actually start to look at the nature of women's inferiority, you have to then start looking at the idea of male power. As soon as you look at the idea of male power, you look at the idea of power itself. Power is itself one of those terms historically which has become very corrupt, because what it means is power over, not power between. And that's the essential problem. In a caring society, caring people will be valued. In a society which is rational, rational people will be valued. And clearly you won't decide whether they're caring or whether they're rational by what's between their legs.
Steve gave us an example in a way of poetic justice happening, because Robert Blake was teased by Rousseau and is like the mock on Voltaire and mock on Rousseau. So we saw Rousseau, he mocked the thing, and yeah, it was all good fun, and I liked it. But I think we should be careful in seeing this basic flaw in a thinker who nevertheless has seen in an indicative made major breakthroughs and marvellous insights which were a step forward for human understanding, yet had within it contradictions even against his own insights and his own standards, his own methods. Of course, that can be pointed out. There's always a danger of putting these people on pedestals, such as our institutions for learning tend to do, and then, of course, knocking them down is all good fun. But it would be a pity to lose out on the valuable contribution made. For example, an example a little nearer home, I'm sure Steve is well familiar with that close cooperator of William Morris, of whom Steve is on record of considerable admiration. Belfort Pax, which William Morris wrote one very important book, which gives us very great and valuable pioneering insights into scientific socialism. Belfort Pax, in another context, wrote a quite bizarre, nutty book of a misogynist nature. Even nuts on the question of women. But that doesn't invalidate Belfort Pax's contribution to socialist ideas. It does show a kink, and also one could show great contradictions between these basic approaches and values and the particular approaches of women.
Let me just answer this. I don't want to get into a major debate about the validity of Rousseau as a thinker. Rousseau was wrong, Marx was right, that's it. But when Eddie makes a point that, you know, is all good fun, I mean, and one has to take these inconsistencies, you know, it depends who you are. Depends who you are whether you take inconsistencies. I accept some inconsistencies, I don't accept others. See, if somebody says, look, all people should be equal, all people should live in a moneyless society, we shouldn't have wages, we should work according to our ability, we should take according to our need, and black people should be put in concentration camps, then, you know, people who are white might say, well, okay, it's a step forward to what Enoch Powell is saying. On the other hand, if you're black, you don't say that. And what I'm saying is that it seems very interesting that whereas today we do not revere people who are racists because we have learnt to have contempt for racism, Rousseau is somebody who wrote some quite offensive things to some people in this room who are women, and yet we do revere him. And it seems to me that that's not a reason to throw out babies with bathwaters and all the rest of the thing, but to understand that. Again, with Darwin, I made a comment, I spoke about Darwin, I quoted from what Darwin said. I think it's a great pity, this is the age of Glasnost, we can attack the party, yes, the Socialist Standard has published articles in quite uncritical praise for Darwin. Quite aside from the fact that I think that's biologically probably mistaken, I think, again, the fact that Darwin had these quite mistaken and antisocial views about women is something which is always something socialists are going to be pointing out. We owe it to people who want to find out to do that. You're right about Belfort Bax. Bax collaborated with Morris. Bax detested women. Bax's proof of the inferiority of women was a newspaper cutting he had about a woman who fell from the Clifton suspension bridge in Bristol, and she landed on her head and didn't die. And he said, therefore, women must have thick heads. And you say, OK, the man was a bit of a crank. But on the other hand, you know, you can't just say, well, he was a bit of a crank, he hated women, but on the other hand, he was all in favour of the fraternity of humanity. If you hate women and you're in favour of the fraternity of humanity, one has to be more important than the other. In Belfort Bax, I happen to think that socialism was more important to him than his hang-ups about women. In the case of Rousseau, I don't think that. Rousseau was, in fact, part of a whole number of thinkers. Schopenhauer, for example, I can quote directly from Schopenhauer in his work on women, said, woman exists solely for the propagation of the species. I mean, you can't, I think, then say, well, you know, he wrote some pretty good stuff in other books. You can say it was good, but I think if you're talking about women, you look at that. And there are other examples. Nietzsche spoke about, you know, man is a warrior, the woman is there for the recreation of the warrior. Again, you have to look at that. So I think what you know, when you come to look at this, what I was trying to point out, one of the things I wanted to point out particularly to women who were here, is that because men have tended to control the history of ideas, then what has happened is that we look back at great ideas, and because people like Eddie and myself, being men, can say it's all good fun and it's not an attack on us, we can say, okay, these were great thinkers with a few defects. You look at it as a woman and you say these were people who were potentially great thinkers with major offensive and anti-social positions. You know, I don't think we disagree, but don't turn this into a discussion about philosophy. Raise other points.
No.
What do you think it is that success in solving its views or whatever are so heavily condemned as perhaps extreme racist views are? As you said, most of us regard racists with like a ridicule or contempt. And yet people can say derogatory things about women, which don't generally come to be a fact so much. Why do you think that continues to be the case?
Well, I think it's a very complicated argument. Sorry, well, both of us want to deal with this. Do you want to deal with it?
Well, you might...
Well, let me say this. I think it's a complicated argument. He can give the official answer to that. I think, in fact, that the problem is that racism is part and parcel of the class struggle. Racism arose out of class relationships in a much clearer way. See, I think patriarchy and the class struggle is not nearly as intimately linked as some people would have it, including some socialists. So socialists will have to argue with each other about that. So, in a sense, what I'm saying is that I think there is a very clear cause and effect link between property, society, capitalism, and racism. My own view is that that link is not nearly as clear when it comes to attitudes to women. I think the other reason is that, by and large, of course, capitalism has found it very important to bring black workers into the labour force in a way that it has found it necessary to push women out of the labour force because of its periodic crises where they need to find a group that they can push out easily.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd say two things, add two things to that. I think also, as what Eddie, well, something was been said as well, the sort of attitude that, you know, having sort of sexist ideas is not really that important. You know, you can... As long as most of your ideas are okay, you're all right, you know. And I think that a lot of men who, again, speaking from my personal experience, who I've spoken to, have been, I would say, you know, their ideas were sort of progressive when it comes to the subject of sexism and sort of women's roles and things like that. Their attitudes were in total contradiction to their other attitudes. So I think that's probably another. Point. And also, of course, in our society, it is men who are generally in positions of power and dominance, and as Steve said, in position production of ideas. And, you know, given that, it's not surprising that, you know, this whole issue of sexism and women's roles is not sort of that. You know, that sort of come to the fore and really sort of been dealt with adequately, you know.
I'm not sure that I entirely agree with you. I mean, I agree with the main bits of your argument. But what frightens me about what you're saying is it's kind of these women out of the crowd. What you're talking about is male ideas being, propagated and accepted by men. What about women? What have they thought about that? And the evidence is that a lot of women have protested throughout history about the positions that they've been put in, and I think that there's an important question about why their ideas didn't gain currency. I mean, I think that the example of Rousseau is an important one, because, you know, here you have a situation where equality is on the agenda, and not only was it rejected by men, but it was rejected by the majority of women as well. And I think one of the interesting questions that we need to ask is, what is it about sexist society that women accept? Why is it they accept that? What is it in it for them? And there is something in it for them. There is, very much so, because, you know, again, there's a sort of ambiguity about women's position. But women don't want to. When women are faced with the choice of entering into the male world of work, paid employment, in that sort of public world as it's known, it usually means giving up something that they hold very dearly, namely their role as mothers. And that's the choice that we're being presented with, that you either have to do one or the other, or you try to work out some unhappy compromise between the two. I don't find it surprising that many, a lot of women still will reject the notion of entering the male world on male terms. Because, you know, as men know, there's not much in it for them. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the choice that we're being given? Mm-hmm. And I can see why a lot of women would find it far more attractive to be at home with their children, where at least they've got some control over their time. They don't have to clock in and clock out looking after kids. Okay, they're on call all the time. But at least do have some autonomy. And I think to go back to the 18th century and Rousseau, one of the interesting developments that was going on then was precisely this different notion of the family and the creation of a family structure in which women spent more time with their children because there wasn't this idea that you set your children away to be cared for. And there was the development of the space in which women could exercise some kind of autonomy, albeit in a limited sphere. So I think that, yes, it's partly about, you know, men propagating ideas, but it's also important to remember that women have also, and in this century and so still doing so, feminists propagate ideas, different sets of ideas, that have not caught on. And that's the question I think we need to look at.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. I wouldn't argue.
More points. I prefer to take someone who hasn't spoken yet. Yeah.
Well, I think, to be honest, one of the things is that one of the problems is we look at people like Rousseau, people before, people after. The fact of the matter is that the recognition of the equality of women in our society is something that's very late coming indeed. And from my own personal experience, a woman who was later to become one of my best friend, a brilliant and imaginative and clever human being, for years I only knew as John Kirby's girlfriend and didn't know anything about her at all. And even in, right now I'm talking about the 60s, the attitudes to women, even in places like the Committee of 100, were not very good. The number of women who were actually given a chance to perform actively in these areas, if you examine it, was very small indeed. There were one or two outstanding women who did so, who pushed, managed by cooperating with one another, I think of Aiken Carter and Pat Arrowsmith, who together managed to sort of push their way through. But it was a battle even there. And the fact of the matter is that as far as I'm concerned, that in my lifetime there have been three really important strands of thought that have affected the way I've behaved radically. And the most important confrontation I've had in my lifetime has been the fact that I've had to look differently at what I am, A, and B, the way I relate to women, and C, the recognition that women are as important as I used to think I was. And the fact is that we can't escape. To be honest, it is something that has come very late to us as a sex. Men have been very reluctant to face these issues. And it has been racism, yes, we can encompass that, but after all, there are a lot of men who are black. And that you see that the issue of women has still been the one we've been, and still are, the most reluctant to confront. And if I may just say finally, part of the problem is that it's not very easy to confront it for men either, because it leads to a great upheaval in many of the attitudes which we had for a long, long time. And I was 30 before I began really to even think about the problem. And by that time, I'd had all the first 6 years of my life at the Jesuits of Fondon and all the rest of it put into my whole attitudes, and it was an enormous struggle. Fortunately, I was lucky to have a number of articulate and fierce friends who told me off about it. But every time, and I, as you know, had moved in very radical thinking circles in the later part of my life. But people who are not even moving in those sort of circles to face these arguments on everyday domestic situations, the fact is that we are still an overwhelmingly male-dominated society in the way we live out our ordinary lives, and it's a terrible shame that, my goodness, we have to admit that first.
Can I follow up by asking the speaker two very unfair questions?
No. No. If we say no in advance, then you won't think it's because we don't want to answer them.
Then I'll ask you two fair questions.
Right.
We'll give you two unfair answers.
To what extent do they think that men in the Socialist Party can get away with something? What extent do they think that men
do? I'll wait for state amount of contribution. Now, well, depends what exactly you're meaning by that. Have you mean the attitude to, sex as we're talking about it now? I don't know a lot of members of the party who openly display the attitude, right? But I do know that there are members in the party who hold views of that, not exactly of that kind, but very, very similar. And I've often heard them talk and say, well, that sounds a little bit iffy to me, you know, that sort of nature. And, but, you know, when I hear somebody say that, I mean, I attack their ideas. This is I would if I was out in the street and I heard somebody say, just because somebody's a member of the Socialist Party doesn't mean that their education stops. I mean, you know, you could probably get into the party and hold a lot of views that we wouldn't generally accept as a movement, you know. And we probably all know occasions when people have got into the party who have held sexist ideas, racist ideas. These type of things do happen, right? It's not, we haven't got 100% guarantee that when people get into the party, they, you know, or their attitude on reformism, say, for instance, or their total understanding of what we would understand socialism to be. But my attitude would not change in that. If I heard somebody voicing, you know, sexist attitudes, I would challenge those attitudes, just as I say, just so I would if I was out in the, somebody wasn't a member. I don't make any differentiation simply because they're a member of the Socialist Party. It doesn't mean I say, oh, well, that's okay. His other ideas are all right, you know, or even her other ideas are all right, you know, because let's face it, there are a lot of women that also have sexist. I'm not saying in the Socialist Party again. I'm just saying in general, there are a lot of women who would say, yes, well, you know, these people that are radicals, you know, as Steve said, you know, there's something wrong with them. They're lesbians, something like that. You know, there's something weird about them. You know, we're okay about doing what we've been doing for years and years. We don't want any change. So, I mean, that's my answer to that anyway.
Well, I want to give an answer to it because when Jill Coxon and Karima asked me to speak at this, because they set this weekend up to almost entirely, I'll speak any socialist meeting if I'm capable of doing so. But I said there's one thing I wouldn't do, and that is I wasn't prepared coming onto a meeting where men were going to be asked to go on a male guilt trip. And I certainly haven't come here to do that. I don't think that there's any purpose whatsoever for men to have to apologise for their actions or indeed for the actions of other people. And as far as I'm concerned, what I've said about men historically is something which I'm talking about historically. I'm talking about women, I'm talking about historically. The answer is that the Socialist Party is an organisation which has got within it people who accept socialist principles. The extent to which it also contains people who are hypocrites, that's to say they claim to hold principles and they don't really hold them, and the extent to which it contains people who are dishonest even to themselves is something which I can have my own speculations about and private knowledge about. Beyond that, I'm not interested in one way or the other. What I would say, and I think I want to refer back to the less than adequate answer I gave to my friend there about why is sexism, in a sense, being allowed to prevail more than racism. I think the reason is this, that I think if you go into a room like this and make a racist comment these days, it will not be tolerated. And this is what Jamie was saying. You don't get tolerance for making statements these days about coons and niggers and attributes which you claim belong to such derisive terms. You can walk into a room like this and still make jokes about women, which a lot of people are going to laugh at. And you can see it on television. And so whereas the occasional Jim Davidson comedian might get away with a bit of racism on television, no comedian could probably get on television without a hell of a lot of anti-women attacks. And I think that what you have to say about this party is it's made up of members of the working class. I think that its function is to put forward socialist ideas to the best of its ability. But I think that we have to add a rider to that, and that is to say we have to recognise the material limitations upon that ability. And I don't like to think of the revolution as one final act on one final day when everyone becomes conscious. I have a much more pessimistic conception of revolution. I think socialism is going to be a society which will be infinitely better than the one we're living in now. It will also be one in which a lot of other mental and cultural revolutions will have to take place.
One at the front.
I'm a bit worried that neither of the speakers, when answering the question about the different ways in which racism and sexism are treated, failed to point out that in large parts of the world, racism is still extremely strong. And not just in South Africa, I mean, in other countries in Africa which are officially run by the black majority, the capitalist class is largely white. And I think Janie partly answered the question, or partly said what I was going to say, when she said that a lot of women don't object strongly enough, or don't particularly want to liberate themselves to be wage slaves or something like that, and therefore it's not just the men who are doing the oppressing, whereas it's highly unlikely that a large number of black people in a country like Britain would collude in their own oppression. And the other point I'd like to make on that is that it is fairly demonstrable that a black human being is the same as a white human being. And when you do give a black human being the opportunity to act in the same way as a white human being, then it's fairly comfortable that the black can do the same thing as the white. Therefore, racism, where these opportunities have been given, is demonstrably nonsense. But where the opportunities haven't been given, then the racism still exists.
Can I just make... Sorry. Go on.
Something
I might say a little about the party and its attitude on this question, and touch upon an aspect of party history. Members who joined up the 1950 party won't be aware of it. One of the characteristics of the party is that most of its history, of necessity, had to have a strong moral tradition in its propaganda. Forefront of the street corner, because the main political party denied us access to mass media. Our main dissemination of our ideas was the street corner, very often in London, by park. Now, members who didn't come in to ask the 1950 party may not know that actually the only political party that said anything at all radical about this whole question of sex in the late 40s and the 50s, some of the best known speakers in the right part, they also traveled around the country, addressed this question of sexism in a way which was really a precursor of the, to a certain extent, imported women's movement from America. All the vital issues addressed by women radicals and feminists were raised from the late 60s in the current modern period, were raised most vigorously by our speakers, and with the exception of one anarchist speaker in particular, by our speakers and our party alone. Now, because of the fact of the importance of the oral tradition, our propaganda, to a certain extent, this is not reflected in the written word in the social standard. But this anti-sexist attitude, all its ramifications, was something very much which was associated with the party in the late 40s and early 50s. And there were two women in particular who were very much concerned with these matters. One, unfortunately, died early. But it's a sort of lost period to most current members who were not mentioned to the party thereabouts. But because it was more of this, has been at the moment.
That point, I also think, is absolutely right, that if you bring people, children are brought up to be to perceive each other in terms of sexual differences. If a person has a little boy, the first thing you do, you look at this weedy little lump lying in a cot, and you say, "Look at him! Isn't he strong? He's going to be a soldier. He's going to be this and be that." If it's a girl, you say, "Isn't she pretty? Isn't she that?" You don't say to a little boy, "Isn't he pretty?" Apart from anything, for a very long time, there was a view that if you say that to boys too often, they'll become homosexuals. So you certainly don't say that to boys. Again, you don't say to girls. I mean, imagine going in, you know, somebody who's just had a baby looking at the child in the cot and saying, "Look at her, doesn't she look tough? She looks like she'd go and beat people up when she gets older." You just don't say that. But people therefore had that response. You know, on your point, of course, South Africa isn't the only racist society. Britain has got a racist, all kinds of racist laws, and all kinds of laws discriminate against women, and even more laws discriminate against black women. We know that, no doubt about it. I hope we didn't avoid that. But let me just make one other point. You know, somebody made a point about the fact that women haven't had a chance in the same way as black people have had a chance. And incidentally, I hate using these terms. I mean, I hate using the term black people because I regard it as an absurd term. I don't know what a black person is. I've never seen a completely black person. And, the only time I ever saw a completely white person was when I went to visit my mother just after she died in hospital. And she was completely white. And, you know, you want to meet a white person, you go to a mortuary. So, clearly, these are odd terms, and again, talking about what women are capable of, what men are capable of, it looks like you're walking about on your knees, looking at people from a very peculiar perspective, if you are going to talk about what people are capable of by referring to their gender. I've never found it within myself to see things that way. However, let us suppose that it were right that women were incapable of doing certain things that men are doing, and it's no doubt they're incapable of doing certain things men are capable of doing, and even less doubt that men are incapable of doing certain things that women are capable of doing. If that is the case, that doesn't have to prove anything. Inequality does not necessarily, there is no logical and necessary and inevitable correlationship between inequality and powerlessness. The fact, for example, as is the case of one of my good friends and comrades, that you don't have sight, it's clearly inequality on a biological level. You don't have equal sight to those people who can look around. The relationship becomes a dangerous one at the moment when you say that genetic or biological difference between one person and other people becomes a basis for inequality. The moment that you say that a man's inability to have children becomes a reason that he can never be the equal to a woman in caring, or that a woman's inability to run as fast as men in races, if that were proven, and I don't know or care whether it is proven, if that were the case, that doesn't have to lead to inequality. That leads to a statement that one can make about running races, not a statement that you can then make about anything else. And that's a problem, that what we are dealing with is not a scientific analysis here. We're dealing with an attempt to find reasons to oppress people. And what you've got to then ask is, well, why does a reason exist to oppress people? And I would say the reason exists to oppress people because A, capitalism needs to divide and rule. B, capitalism needs women to run the family and to reproduce labour power for it. And C, because in fact capitalism likes the outlook of women more than it likes the outlook which is expected of men, because women are on the whole submissive. And that is another enormously important point that Janie raised, which I'm going to occupy all of the question time tomorrow, like Sandy Easton, and talk about, which Janie raised, and that is that, of course, a lot of women accept these attitudes. A lot of women like being submissive. And to ignore that, to engage in some kind of romantic political struggle where every woman is a political Amazon desiring power and every man is chaining her down to the floor, is nonsense. In fact, a lot of the problems that women face are brought upon themselves by women who have accepted their conditioning. And after all, one of the things about human beings, unlike, you know, lemmings and baboons, is that we are in fact capable of consciousness. And we do therefore have to make decisions. And one of those decisions is, do I accept my conditioning or do I not? And if you accept your conditioning, then you accept everything that goes with it, I would argue. And if you don't accept it, then you don't. And that's what's the difference, I would argue, between being a revolutionary and being a conservative.